Yeah, okay. I have been actually hesitant to record this episode for a while because I guess, I don't know, I'm calling it something like breaking the rules or break the rules. And I really don't want people to just think that's license to be a dick. Right? I'm not going to sit here and tell you today to break the rules and at the cost of other people's feelings, right? At the expense of other people's feelings, at the expense of the song, at the expense of being a good human being, right? I just want to tell you today, in the trajectory of my career, what I have experienced in terms of what I thought were things that I couldn't change, that actually I could change. The things that I thought were rules, fast and hard rules, that I thought of for so long that weren't actually rules at all. They were just other people's opinions. So I want to help you today. If you are a bit of a rule follower, like I am, like firstborn, like a bit of a rule follower, I want to encourage you to wonder about these things that you hang your hat on, these rules about music, about bass playing, your career, right? I want you to wonder if those are actually rules, if they're important to you, if they're like your tenets, or if they're somebody else's. And if they're not actually real, right? I should have introduced myself. I'm Ian Allison. You might know that if you listen to this podcast, but my incredible co-host, Scott Devine, is not here today. He said, take one solo, Allison. So bringing in the B team, rocking this solo episode for you. Thanks so much. Everybody that writes in, that talks about the podcast, thank you so much. Everybody that has ideas for the podcast, I love it. I'm writing them all down. We're going to get to them. We got a bunch of things we want to talk about. We have guests that we want to bring on. So this podcast is rolling. We're moving up, baby. Yes. And it feels good. It feels really good. So today, let me talk to you about these rules. Are they really rules? Are there rules to this? Of course, there are best practices. But are there things that you need to adhere to navigate success and to ensure that you're doing things the right way? Maybe, but I want to push back on some of that a little bit. And some of these are just going to be silly, right? And some will be deeper. Let me say this. I'm going to say this again, and then I'm going to say it again at the end of the podcast as well. What I'm about to tell you does not give you an excuse to be a shitty person. I'm not saying break the rules and be late to things. I'm not saying, I've got my notes here. I'm not saying break the rules and be mean, right? You still have to be kind. I'm not saying break the rules and just play whatever you want over the song. No, you still have to support, of course. What I'm telling you is that there are opinions of others that don't need to matter to you. Okay. The first thing I want to tell you about is my first teacher showed me how to play with a pick on the bass. I was 13. I went in for bass lessons and George, my first teacher, told me I could only play with a pick. I said, oh, and I'd seen so many other bass players play with their fingers, but you know, he was my teacher. So I was like, okay, I mean, he's my teacher, I guess. You know, and he said, yeah, you know why? I said, no, I don't know why. He said, because finger players are blurry. And I went, what? And he said, you can't hear anything they do. And I said, I thought, okay. And then I'm thinking like, but what about Geddy Lee? Or like, what about Billy Sheehan? Or, you know, and he's like, no. Most finger players, I mean, there's exceptions, but most finger players are blurry. I'll never forget him saying that to me. So I learned how to play with a pick first. And I'm not advocating that anybody else does that or that you push that on your students. But in a way, learning how to play with a pick was kind of amazing. I will say it killed me in a few instances. I had some really dire situation where, like, you know, I... All right, hold on. Let me get this bass. I came into jazz band in the eighth grade, right? Like, I'm 14. I've been playing the bass for a year with a pick. And I came into jazz band, and he pulled up C-Jam Blues. I may have told this story on the pod before, but he's like, a one, two, a one, two. And I went. I mean, right. And that's, and the whole band stopped and looked at me and laughed and right. And so I had to discover really early on that it wasn't, it actually wasn't the right thing for every situation. But then what I also discovered is that, you know, so I swung hard fingers, right? And now, you know, okay, so I'm playing all the things with my fingers now. And I'm playing cooler jazz. You know, I'm playing this line, I'm playing blues, you know, with fingers or thumb. But then what I would discover is that there were people that were really opinionated about the pick, and I could just do it because that's how my first teacher taught me how to do it. And then I'll never forget, like, being around other bass players and someone saying to me, like, oh man, yeah, you know, I had to try to play with a pick for this thing, and oh, it was so hard. And I, you know, and I'm like, oh, bass players don't really play with a pick anyway. And I'm kind of going, haha, yeah, guys, laughing along and thinking, but it, like, shouldn't you know how to play with a pick? Like, for me, it was just a given because I started doing it. And then I start to encounter all that stuff around, like, oh, real bass players don't play with a pick, like all that stuff. And I thought, oh, that's so weird. And from a very early age, I saw that sort of dogmatic saying as insecurity. And guess what? That's exactly what it is. If someone ever says to you, playing with a pick is wrong, playing with your fingers is wrong, tapping is wrong, slapping is stupid, soloing is stupid, it's just the time that everybody goes gets a snack. Well, that last part might be true, but right, like anytime anybody says anything, tablature is stupid, like you should only read notation. Anytime somebody puts something into a rule-based, you should do this, you should never do this, ask yourself, where is this coming from? Is this in your best interest? If you have a teacher, peers, parents, other players that you admire, whatever, that say things to you, that give you advice, I need you to think very clearly, is this about me? Like, the advice that you're given, is that in your best interest, or is it more about them? Is it about the person giving you the advice? Because typically when somebody's like, hey, you should always do this, hey, you should never do, that's typically about their own insecurity. I want to say it again. If somebody gives you advice that doesn't feel like it's connecting to you and it doesn't feel like it's in your best interest, it is about them. It's uncovering their own insecurity, their self-consciousness, their inability. So if someone says to you, oh, real bass players don't play with a pick, that is because, guess what? They can't play with a pick. Now, we've probably all been guilty of this at some point in our lives, right? Or in our careers, right? We've probably all wanted to stand on that soapbox and plant a flag for, well, tube is better than solid state, or flats are better than rounds, or like, oh, I hate slapping. It's so like, look at me, or like, oh, bass solo is boring. Everybody has done that. I've done that, but I know when I do that stuff, or when I've done it in the past, if I'm very honest, it has been about my own insecurity. I'm not a great soloist. And I have said before in the past, bass solos, gross, right? Like, ugh. And it wasn't until I figured out a way to approach a bass solo from a way that I would do it, or a simple way. I think more about rhythms than I do about notes. I think way more about rhythmic motivic solos than I do about playing all the scales. And that was a way in for me. And then I stopped saying solos are stupid because I was less insecure about it. I'm going to come back to this thing about the pick, all right? The pick is dope. Don't ever be one of those bass players that gets into the studio, you know, or gets into a band situation and someone says, hey, would this sound better with a pick? And you can't play with one. Don't be that person. A pick is amazing. It can be, of course, like super rock and roll. It can be like funky. It's just the best. Or, I mean, you know, something I love to do is turn on a bit of spring reverb and tremolo. And And then it sounds like where I'm from. Sounds like Montana. And that just wouldn't happen with fingers. If I play that with fingers, it's not the same vibe. It's the sound of the note. There's the pick again, right? Or take that classic Tony Levin bass line, Sledgehammer, Peter Gabriel, right? That's octave pedal, pick, and chorus. Right? Now, what if I play that with fingers? It's still the same line, but it's not the same vibe. And whatever, you might like the finger one better. Who cares? It doesn't matter. It's just that if you have the option, why not be able to have the option? Right? Okay, look, I promise that this isn't just like a... I promise that this isn't just like a soapbox of like, make sure that you can play with a pick. I just want to tell you that that whole thing around don't play with a pick is ridiculous. And if you can't do it, you should learn how to do it. And I'm not telling you that from my, I'm not telling you that because I learned how to play with one first and, you know, got beat up in middle school jazz band. I'm telling you that because it will change all of the things. It will change doors that can open for you. I just did a session, just did a rock session where I think I played almost everything with a pick because it was the right vibe for the tune. It was the perfect vibe. And so why wouldn't I do that, right? So break that rule. If there's a rule in your way about what technique you can and can't use, break it. The pick is a great example. Slapping and tapping, another great example. Let me talk to you about this often very sort of maligned thing around tapping. Like tapping is seen as like this super like fringy technique, unless I suppose you're in like modern metal or something. But tapping, I'm rolling up my sleeves because I'm about to tap. Tapping for me was actually a way to build speed. I remember, I'm still very slow with my hands, and I remember hearing this like double kick drum music, digga 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 da, and I couldn't play digga 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 with a pick or with my fingers. I was slow. So what I started to do is I started to tap on one note with my left hand, and then I would tap the same note with my right hand. So what I'm doing, if you're not watching the pod, I'm tapping a note with my third finger on my left hand, and then again with my second finger on my right hand. And then what I would do is try to get an even sound. And you put a little bit of drive on that, you put a little bit of octave on that. It's awesome. And like with double kick drums, it's just like a relentless engine. And playing with fingers, I can't even play that fast with my fingers. Playing with a pick, it's not the same. And I'm so slow with a pick. I'm like irritating. I'm irritated at myself how slow I am with a pick. That's just like as fast as I can play with a pick. It's so lame. So for me, the tapping thing became a way to increase speed and play the music that I wanted to play. It was like, what's the saying? Necessity is the mother of invention. It really was in that case for me. And it's so, it's such a cool sound. And then what I started to do with it is I started to see it and play pentatonic phrases. So what I would do is I would take my first finger on both hands, play the root, and then the minor third. And then with my second finger on both hands, play the fourth and the fifth. And then my third finger on both hands, I would play the flat seven and octave. And it's crazy. Let me turn off the effects, but I'll turn on some chorus because why not? Oh, sloppy. That technique became a way for me to actually visualize my fretboard and just work on my evenness. And am I using that with singer-songwriters? No. But have I actually used that on sessions before? Like copying synth lines or playing along or doing some kind of like crazy fill in a moment, like as an overdub? I absolutely have. I use it a lot, actually. So now, would I use that on my girl for the wedding gig I'm going to play tonight? No, right? Don't break the rule that way. But don't listen. Maybe this episode should actually be called, like, don't listen to people's advice when it sucks. That's what we're going to rename it. Don't listen to people's advice when it sucks, right? Like, if I were to tell you, oh, tapping is so sick and you should use it everywhere because bass players need to get more notoriety. That's bad. That's bad advice. That's advice that sucks. But if I'm saying tapping is just another sound, it's a way to approach the instrument in a different way, and if you find a use for it, it can be super valuable. That attack sound is so different. I mean, listen to this. We have, if I play an E with my fingers, right? E with my fingers. E with my muted thumb. How about an E with a pick? How about E with a open, not muting, with a pick? Okay, how about a tapped E? How about a slapped E? All of those sounds are completely different and super cool and valid. So don't listen to people when they talk to you about what techniques you should and shouldn't use, unless you're hired for something and it's a producer and they're saying, ooh, I'd rather you not tap on this 6/8 ballad. Right? Something you should always ask yourself is, why are you doing something? Are you doing it for you? Are you doing it for your ego? Are you doing it for the song? If you're doing it for the song and you really believe in an idea and that it is indeed for the song, then it's a good idea, right? It's good. Even if it might be a little busy or it might be, you know, a style that someone else doesn't quite know or feel, it's a good idea because it's coming from the right place. But if you, you know, if you are like, oh, I gotta fit this thing in, this would be so sick if I could fit this thing in and then other bass players would notice, that might not be the right choice, right? You have to inquire often into why you're doing things. Why am I making the choices I'm making? I mean, that might be good life advice. Here I am saying, don't take advice, and here I'm giving you advice, right? But hopefully you know that this is coming from a really good place. And really, it's the things that I have struggled with and the things that have really helped me over the years, right? So rule breaking, break those rules, play those techniques that people don't like. As long as it's helping the song, right? Here's something else too. Early on in my trajectory, I switched right away to a 6-string bass. Now, don't hear me say break the rules and buy a 6 and put the 4 away. But I will say this: I do think that if you're inclined in a direction of having a huge pedal board or having a huge extended range bass with 3 batteries in it and, you know, and 9 strings, I think you need to do it. I think you need to go down that road. I think it's really dangerous as an educator or as, you know, a 43-year-old professional bass player to say, oh, you should only, you know, play whole notes with a P bass with flats and like just hang back and like, you know, just play so tastefully. Because I think actually what develops taste is a period of not having it. Let me say that again. I think what actually develops taste is going through a period where you don't have it. And maybe a nicer way to say that is going through a period where you're figuring out how to cultivate it. Because if you go through your 6-string bass, active electronics, crazy, and I'm presuming that that's a phase. That might not be a phase. That might be something that you find and you love and you build your career on. But typically, I think that as we get older and as we play more gigs and play with more people, typically, unless you're a solo artist, unless you're making your living playing the bass in your own projects and or like doing clinics, the 6-string super active electronics vibe sort of, at least for me, it was more of a phase. Now that said, I did just buy a Ken Smith 6 not too long ago to harken back to my, like, me writing bass solos and playing the high C string. And But what I will say is that phase, because it was a phase for me, it was really, really important. It was actually the time that I connected the most with the instrument compositionally. So I started to write music on a six-string bass that I never would have written on a four, ever, or even a five, to be honest. And I just sort of thought, you know, I liked John Myung from Dream Theater, so I was like, oh, I've got to get a six-string, because six is clearly better than five and certainly better than four. I mean, are you serious? Of course it's better than four. That's what I thought, right, when I was in middle school. And I just went down that road, and then it led me in all these cool directions. I wrote bass solos, and I competed and performed and studied with a couple of great players. I studied with Brian Bromberg as a result of, you know, like getting on the six. And I mean, it was a really important time for me. And then, like so many bass players, I started to check out other music, and I started to play in the studio a little bit more. And I realized that the six was maybe more of a statement than I wanted it to be. It was less about support and more about a creative endeavor. And then when I was playing on someone else's music, I found, oh, well, I don't know that I need to bring the six, and I don't even think it's the right vibe for this thing, right? And so there are some rules that I did sort of start to see and were really valuable to me, because I remember bringing the six on a session, pulling it out, and having a producer go, oh, six string, huh? You know, and I was like, yeah. And I already I was aware of this, right? So already I said, oh, but I mean, don't worry. I'm not, you know, I'm going to play it like a four and maybe throw a, you know, if it calls for it, a low D or something, but I'm not going to play, you know, big extended jazz, like, you know, like flat nine chord shapes up on the high C string. I mean, I'm not an idiot. But what I saw was his look of concern when I pulled it out of the bag. Like, oh no, we have a bass nerd on our hands and we want a musician. Ha! Producers think that a lot. Artists do too. And I want you to think about it as well. You pull out the fancy, you know, Ken Smith six or, you know, whatever it is, right? With all the knobs and switches and the huge neck and all the strings. And immediately it says something about you. And that is true. That is true. It gives people pause. Now, in a proper environment, like if you go into a gospel environment where fives and sixes are way more common, that's actually probably way better than pulling out a P bass, right? It just depends on where you are. But I have always been in more of these, I don't know, I guess sort of like indie rock or like singer-songwriter contexts where like the gold hardware six-string active vibe was like a strong flavor that wasn't super appreciated, right? Be like, hey, everybody likes black licorice, right? Everybody loving black licorice, right? Like salty, the salty stuff, the salty black licorice, like from Norway or what? Everybody loves that, right? Well, in a room of 100 people, if you're not in Norway, maybe 15 people like it. I'm one of those people. I'm way into salty black licorice. I love it. But not everybody, right? It's a strong flavor. And you just need to know that. You need to know that if you're the guy that brings the Norwegian salty black licorice to the party, it's going to say something about you, right? It might be better to bring donuts or pizza or wings. You know what I'm saying? It's just a barrier. I started to see my gear or my choice of instrument to bring to something, to a gig or to a session, as a barrier that I had to jump over. Now, a lot of times when I would start to play or whatever, it would kind of calm. Oh, okay. Maybe Ian's tasteful after all, even though he brought this monstrosity of a bass into the studio, right? But especially when you're starting out, if you have that awareness around environment and around the right thing for the gig, it's really, really cool. It's really good. And so this is, now I'm telling you to follow the rules. I'm telling you to be socially aware. Think about your social EQ, emotional intelligence, emotional, IQ stands for what? Stands for your smarts, but I don't know, is it an acronym? And EQ is emotional. If IQ is intelligence, EQ is emotional. I think I know at least that. So if you walk into a situation, really be thinking about EQ and not equalizer, be thinking about your emotional intelligence. What do you need to bring into the situation to make this situation feel good, right? And then here's where I'm going to tell you to then break the rules. Cool. So you bring the right base into that space and you're pumped and everybody's pumped. Hey, oh, look, it's the guy that brought the, it's the guy that brought the P bass with flats. Oh, everybody loves a P bass with flats. Yay. That's excellent. Great. And then, but also you brought a fretless. Oh yeah, you did. You brought a fretless, dude. It's in the double bag. You brought a fretless. You did. It's in there because you listened to the tunes beforehand and you thought that maybe fretless would be pretty dope on that ballad. And you pull it out after you've gained the trust, after you've set the vibe with the P bass with flats. You say, hey, I have this idea. I don't know, but I think it might be good to try. And because you've built the trust, the artist and the producer says, great. And then you pull out the 5-string gold hardware fretless or whatever, Lakeland, right? And plug it in. And it's lovely because you've done the work, you've listened to the tunes, you've thought about it, and now you've gained the trust. Now, if you pull that sucker out first, fretless 5 on this singer-songwriter project, I don't know, dude. But because you gained the trust with the rule following first, it allows you to break the rules later. Does that make sense? I think I do that a lot on sessions where I will bring the basses that you're supposed to bring, or the basses that I think are really critical. Like I just did this rock session, right? And I brought a P bass with rounds, and I brought a jazz bass with rounds. And then I even brought a Dingwall 5. And for this, that seemed actually appropriate, not like an oddball choice. But then I also brought my 12-string bass. And that's that's like a vibe. But I didn't pull that out and play it on the first tune, right? So I'm following the rules so that at some point I can break them. I think I learned this from Tony Levin, who played with Peter Gabriel, plays with Peter Gabriel, incredible side musician that would often take big risks on sessions. He would bring a fretless bass. He would play with a pick. He's the guy that, put the taped the drumsticks onto his fingers. Actually, Jerry Murata did it first, played drums on his bass, and then Tony figured out a way to cut drumsticks and then finally had them manufactured. They're called funk fingers, and he plays with them on the ends of his fingers to get a certain sound. Tony also plays Chapman's stick, and he played like Chapman's stick on Shock the Monkey by Peter Gabriel, a huge hit. And I read somewhere that, sometimes he would pull that out and producers would say like, no, like put that away. No way. But then other producers that weren't maybe making choices out of aesthetic or out of fear, because sometimes producers do that. You know that, right? You didn't know that. Sometimes producers make choices out of aesthetic and fear. Engineers too. You didn't know? Sometimes engineers make choices out of aesthetic and fear. It's so true. My favorite producers and my favorite engineers are the ones that are not afraid to try something. But you have to earn that try. You have to earn that trust by doing the right thing first. And I don't know, maybe Tony in the past has made the mistake of pulling out the Chapman stick first. Oops, that's an oops, you guys. That's an oops. You bring a stick to a session that isn't a King Crimson tribute band session? Oops, not happening, right? Maybe you pull it out on the 8th tune and you wonder about that overdub that cops the synth vibe. Then maybe it's cool, right? But you got to follow the rules so that you can break them. I have found that time and time again on sessions. And even with pedals, it's so the same. I mean, I'll show up to something with the pedals that I use, but if there's something, there's a tune that I think, oh, this could be so cool to have this whammy pedal vibe, or, oh, this big washy reverb. I do a thing where I'll do overdubs almost like cymbals, but I'll do like a pick scrape into a huge washy reverb, like a fast pick scrape. And it just explodes like almost sort of like a cymbal. And it's so cool. I think it's cool. And typically the producers that I've used that for think it's cool too. But if I came into the session and was like, hey, I've got this idea for like cymbal overdubs on the bass, can you imagine? Like, who is this guy? No, get him out of here. But it's at the end of the session, right? After you've built the trust, after you've played the stuff that's the right thing, where you talk about pick, scrape, reverb cymbals. I'm always just trying to be creative. I'm trying to serve the song. I'm trying to serve the moment. I'm trying to make people happy. But I understand that there is an order in which to do those things, right? Pick, scrape, reverb on bass for cymbals is really breaking the rules. I mean, that is like, first of all, a pick scrape? Oh, no, no. Those two things are guitar things. Reverb? Oh, no, 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 right. Oh, and in the cymbal range? I mean, everything about that is wrong. But it's so right. It's so right, I'm telling you. And that is entering in that territory when you're thinking more like a producer or more like a composer. Yeah, producer or a composer. I'm thinking cinematically. When I'm thinking about pick, scrape, cymbals, I'm thinking I want energy to go. And how can I do that on the thing that I have? Like, I don't have a sample in front of me that does that. I'm not pulling up a splice loop, right? I'm trying to just do it on the bass because that's what I have in front of me. It's the instrument I'm using. But I don't come in talking like that at first. Hey, let me talk to you about reverb. Since we're talking about reverb, here's another rule that you should break. You should absolutely break it. I remember I played a gig for a band called the Brighton in Minneapolis, and they had these amazing sort of like baritone guitar parts that were recorded by a bass player named Aaron Fabrini. Killer. Aaron Fabrini, if you ever listen to this, you have been such a huge influence on me. You're an amazing player. He plays a lot of pedal steel now in addition to bass, and he's just phenomenal. And he recorded all this cool baritone stuff. And I remember thinking, oh, that's a great sound. And since then, I have really embraced that sound. It's probably a lot due to like having to play with this band and cover Aaron's parts with the Brighton because it was super cool to me. And it's that thing that I love that I showed you actually at the beginning. It's spring reverb. So here's my bass. This is my 68 jazz bass with flats. That's another no-no. You're not supposed to put flats on a jazz bass. They're only supposed to go on a P bass or a Hofner. Put them on a jazz bass. Do whatever you want. There's the spring reverb, right? It's like good vibrations. Right? Very 60s sounding. But then, if you add tremolo after the reverb, do you hear what happens? The reverb tail gets affected by the tremolo. And then you have this beautiful sound that I love. Glenn Campbell played Wichita Lineman, the solo of Wichita Lineman on a bass six with spring reverb and trem, you know. Right? I've probably played this on the pod before. That last thing that Glenn plays is so hip. Just check that out. He sort of swings these rhythms and just plays a D. I could do that all day long. Okay, back to the story. That's reverb and tremolo on a bass. And I think that happens to be one of the most beautiful sounds of all time. I use it on everything. I find a way, I swear, to put it on like almost every session that I'm doing. I've even used it as like snare reverb, you know, like, so say there's a groove and it's like, I'm just hitting the horn of my bass. I mean, it's such a vibe. It's such a vibe. And sorry for the bad beatboxing, but that's how I hear music. I hear it in my head all the time, constantly. It's driving me crazy. Please help me. So I go into this music store. Back to the story about reverb. I go into a music store and I don't have any reverb at the time, right? I don't have any of that stuff. And I'm just looking for like a spring reverb pedal, I guess. or like, I mean, I'm not going to buy an amp with reverb in it, but I don't really know what I'm doing. And this is years and years ago. And I go into a store, and I'm not going to tell you the store, and I'm not going to tell you the person. But I go in, and I say, hey, I'm looking just for like a spring reverb pedal, I guess. And the cashier said, oh yeah, cool. Let's check this one out, and showed me a couple of options. Okay, great. And we walked into the room, you know, where you sit down and play. And he said, what guitar do you want to grab? And I was like, I'll grab one of these basses, like I guess maybe a jazz bass. And he was like, what? I was like, yeah, did you not hear me? I'd like to grab a jazz bass. He goes, bass? Yeah. He goes, oh. And then he said to me, you must not play in any bands. Oh, dude. I said, what? And he goes, you must not play in any bands. And I will say, like, at the time, I was playing in a lot of bands. And I said, oh. And instead of getting upset, like I felt the blood start to rise, but I want to be cool guy. I'm trying to be cool guy. I'm trying to be cool, trying to play it cool. I want to be Ian Plays It Cool. Come on, let's bring in Ian Plays It Cool into the game. I said, why do you say that? And he said, because it's a rule. You just don't use reverb on bass. Ding, ding, ding. There it is, dude. The rule. Oh, man. If anybody ever says that to you, it is such a red flag of their own insecurity, their own failures, right? You can't use reverb on bass. That is such horseshit. But he said it. It's a rule. You don't use bass. You don't use reverb on bass. And I said, oh, really? And he said, yeah. He said, I mean, it just turns into mud. And, you know, your band will hate it and you'll get fired. And I thought, and I said, okay, well, and instead of being like, because like, now what, dude? Like, now what? So I said, well, I guess I appreciate the advice. Incorrect. Didn't appreciate the advice. But I said, hey, I appreciate the advice. I guess I'd still like to try the pedal. And he said, okay, you know, like reluctantly gave it to me. And then I started to play more sort of like Twin Peaksy baritone stuff on it. Like I started to play this kind of thing. And I remember he came back and said, to this guy's credit, he came back and said, okay, that sounds pretty cool. It sounds like you maybe do play in bands. And I said, yeah. I said, this is actually for something really specific. This is for something where I'm kind of trying to be like a bass six or like a baritone guitar. And he said, oh, well, why didn't you tell me that in that case? And I thought to myself, I didn't tell you that because you were a dick to me. Like, you know, I don't have to explain this to you, right? But it's so interesting, that vibe. It happens a lot in music stores, and it can really happen a lot with your teachers too. If any of you are out there and you're studying with someone and they say something to you that feels like advice or that feels like a rule, you really need to ask yourself, where is this coming from? Is this coming from a good place? Now, if someone is saying to you, hey, it's really important to play with good time, that's true. Okay, that's true. That's not somebody's shitty opinion. That's just true. Or if someone says, hey, you should really be thinking about your tone, or hey, you should really be thinking about your technique and the evenness of your subdivisions with your plucking hand. That's good advice. But if somebody says, you can't play that five string on this gig, can you not? Is that really true? I wonder. Now, it may not be the best taste, but is that really actually a rule? Or if someone says, ugh, like punk rock, it's so sloppy, it sucks, don't listen to punk rock. Hang on. Paul Simonon's bass playing is some of the best rock and roll bass playing of all time. Mike Dirnt's bass playing is some of the coolest punk rock and roll bass playing of all time. That's a bad, or like, you know, even on the other side of the aisle, right? Someone's like, jazz is just like, you know, just play a mistake twice and call it jazz. Like, jazz sucks. Hold on a minute. Like, that's not right. You have to read between the lines. You have to ask, whenever somebody says something, an opinion, a bold claim, a statement, you have to ask yourself this question: why is this person saying that? Is this person saying it for me? Are they saying it so that my life is better? Or are they saying it because it's their shitty opinion and they need to get it off their chest? That's really what you have to ask. You know, now you can even be asking that about this podcast right now, right? Because I've had all these experiences that have sort of burned me of people saying, well, yes, you have to do this and you have to do this and write it. And I got, let me tell you one more. I got so into forums, right? I got way into forums in the early 2000s. Talkbase, oh man, I was on Talkbase all the time. I was even posting some opinions about stuff. Oh yeah, about these tubes are better than these tubes and whatever. That's all fine and good. But what I discovered is that I fell prey to people that posted on those forums often. They became the sort of like schoolyard bullies of that space. And I'm thinking of several people in particular. I can even see their avatars. I'm not going to name names, but I can see their avatars in my mind where they were so opinionated and they had these rules. Oh, well, you should never use that cabinet in this kind of room. Oh, these strings are terrible. Like, oh, so many opinions, right? And maybe it's fine. Maybe it's like, it's for them. It's their own thing. And I'm sure even in some posts, they're like, well, of course, not for everybody, but for me. But it just, I really took that stuff. Maybe this is just all on me. I sort of took that stuff as rules, as gospel truth. Or even like, even before that, when Bass Player Magazine would make claims about records, they used to do a thing, Bass Player Magazine, you guys, used to do a thing where they would rate a record with a A to F rating, and then they would rate the bass player A to F. And I'll never forget, I'm going to come back to talk bass, but I will never forget seeing something on a Guns N' Roses record. That's dating me. That's all good. I'm 43. Guns N' Roses, Use Your Illusion. You know, the record got a C or something. And then Duff McKagan, the bass player, got a C minus or a D, or I could be getting that wrong, but it was bad. I remember the grades for that were bad. And I remember thinking when I heard Duff play the intro of Sweet Child of Mine on his P bass with chorus, boom, dum, do, 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 do. That line. let's do it without the. But I am going to do it with chorus. He played this. Is such a sick bass line. So when I saw that Bass Player Magazine gave him a D or whatever it was, I was like, oh. And then I thought to myself, oh, well, they know they're in the position of authority and they know better than I do. And so I just must have bad taste, or I must be wrong. I'm not following the rules. I don't think this guy sucks and this big institution does. And man, that was a shitty way to grow up, feeling like, oh, well, there's a tastemaker that says there's good and bad, and now I guess I'm not cool unless I think the same things. And again, that could just be about me. I should have maybe talked to somebody about it, and someone says, oh, you don't have to believe that. It's just kind of for fun and whatever. We're just kind of, you know, taking a little shot and it's all in fun. But I just remember feeling like, well, there's nowhere else to look. I grew up in this small town in Montana. I got kicked out of bass lessons actually because my teacher was a narcissist. But there was nowhere to look. And so I looked to forums and to these publications, and when there were these rules, these things that we were supposed to follow, I felt like I needed to be the good bass player and toe the line. So I'm telling you that part of that is on me, right? Like, I could have said, I don't need to believe this crap. But it was also the only crap to believe at the time, right? And I wanted to fit in, right? We all kind of want to fit in. So back to the forums. I'm on Talkbase, and people would say all this stuff about the gear, and so opinionated about gear, and you know, and cutting other people down for using different things, and just. And then there was one day, I'll never forget it, where one of the main posting guys on the forum posted a link to his band. Oh yeah, dude, he posted a link to that band, played at the played at the brass bulldog Friday night with the boys. Real knockdown dragout gig, I'll tell you. Here is the link. Click on it and be amazed. It's me playing my gear, and it's so sick. And I'm like, wow, I am ready to be blown away. I'm going to click this link right now, and this is going to change my life. Hover the mouse over the URL. Click that link. SoundCloud pops up. Oh, baby, hit me with that sweet, sweet inspiration. I'm ready. And it sucked. It sucked. And I was like, wait a minute. And my mind and it was like falling backwards. It was like Inception, like falling back slowly. What is happening? This is the person and the playing. This is the person's playing that I've been taking all of this advice. I didn't resonate with the music. I didn't resonate with his sound. I didn't resonate with anything about the recording. And I had made all these purchases and thought so hard about all this gear, right? And like, and all these opinions. Well, if so-and-so's saying it, it must be true. And then I heard the music and it was bad to me. To me, it was bad. It was not something that was inspirational to me. And I essentially, from that day forward, left Talkbase. I still am sometimes there if I'm, you know, I like to, your boy likes to snoop the classifieds. I occasionally will post. But that is a place, to me, where there are some bullies. And most of the time, it's a great place. But there are these people that come up that are the sort of the tastemakers of the platform. And I know that that happens in any forum community. I just know that that's naturally part of the deal. It's like Lord of the Flies. But it's not something that I resonate with. I don't want to dole out this sort of prescriptive advice around rules of what you can and can't do or should and shouldn't use. It's all about who you are and what you like and trusting that. I think if I could go back in time, I wish that I would have trusted my own just sort of my own taste a little more instead of being pulled in all these directions. And maybe I just had to go through it, but I sort of wish I would have thought, seen someone post something and think, huh, maybe that's cool for you, but I don't know if that's cool for me because I really like this sound, you know? Same thing happened to me with jazz bass guitars. You know, I bought this Antigua Jazz that I play a lot of, 78, and I bought it before I was really active on forums in the very early 2000s, 2001 or something maybe. And I bought it for a good deal and I got it and I just thought it was sweet. And it has like big neck pocket gaps. I've talked about this a lot. Big neck pocket gaps and weak kind of pickups, and it was really heavy. And same thing with this. I'm holding up a 68, which I have flats on right now. And the same thing with this. When I bought this too, it's not perfect. Oh my gosh. It's, you know, it just has all these build quality issues and pickups are super microphonic. I mean, I feel like I can, like talk into the pickups almost. And then what happened is I started to read these opinions on forums, these rules about weight. Oh, well, it's more resonant and it's better if it's lighter. Is it? It isn't. Oh, if it has neck pocket gaps, the tone won't transfer. Is that true? It isn't true. Oh, well, only Fenders made in the pre-CBS era are really worth buying. Any other vintage instrument is, you know, not great. Is that true? It isn't. All of these things. And you know what is true? What you like. You know what is true? What you like. I bonded with that 78 Antigua, like notoriously the worst year for Fender ever, but it's my birth year. And I'm like, I want a 78. And I got it and I fell in love with it. And then because I read all those forums, I went out and tried to beat it with like 20 other jazz basses. This one did survive. The 68, I have flats on it all the time. And I love this instrument. I love it so much. I use the neck pickup on it most of the time. There's another sort of rule breaking thing. It almost sounds to me, if I get the chorus off, it almost sounds like a P bass. But it's a little more nimble sounding than a P bass, and I love it. I love that about it. But, right, I fell in love with these two jazz basses and then discovered that, they're bad years. 68 and 78, especially 78, but 68 too. Oh, it's post-CBS. Oh, no. Well, I should probably try to find. And then I went on this hunt and spent countless dollars and hours and energy trying to beat these instruments with the Holy Grail. Now, look, I'm not saying that that's anybody else's fault. Please hear me in taking accountability for this. It is my fault, but the seed was certainly planted in the forums by people that had big opinions about stuff that I think maybe they had no business having opinions about. Because you listen to the band and you go, hold on a minute. And again, that's a value judgment on my end too, right? Someone else might listen to that band and be like, this is the best. But what I discovered was I needed to pay more attention to me. I needed to tune out some of that outside influence, especially when it came to taste and subjectivity, and really pay attention to what I like. And I am encouraging you to do the same on the SBL podcast. Tune out some of those persnickety opinions about what you should and shouldn't do, should and shouldn't like. Pay attention to what you love. It's going to help you find your own voice. It's going to help you find your own path, your own trajectory. And guess what? When you use something, when you make music that is different than other people, when you use a piece of gear that is different than other people, and you believe it and you do it and it's good, guess what? You become the tastemaker. You become the person that people are like, oh, this person's doing something different. Pretty soon, everybody's got the same pedals. This happens all the time. Everybody's got the same basses. Everybody's using the same strings. Everybody uses the same pedals. And then there's somebody else that comes out and uses a different thing and goes, I don't know, I like this. And people are inspired by that because they hear it and they go, whoa, that's cool. And then everybody moves, right? It's like soccer or football if you're in the UK when you were a little kid, right? We called it beehive soccer, where someone would have the ball and everybody was just around that person with the ball. Wherever the ball was, everybody on the team was like a beehive, right? That's what happens with gear and with music and with taste, right? Something is different and it's successful, and then everybody follows that trend. And let me please implore you to not be a trend follower, but be a trend setter. If you like something, if you're playing that old PV amp that isn't cool, or you know, I'm putting air quotes, isn't cool, right? Or if you're playing some instrument that like, oh, you know, I've got this like Squire bass and I think that, you know, I'm hearing that I need to get an American Standard, but do you like it? Is it sick? Is it great? Do you love it? Then awesome. Here's a great case in point. Laura Lee, who plays with Krongbin. Do you know Laura Lee? She's Laura Leezy on Instagram. She plays an SX jazz bass with flats. Do you know SX, the company? It's like a knockoff Fender company. And I don't even know if they're still around, but they made these kind of cool looking Fender copies, but they are cheap. I mean, I feel like you could get them for like $199 or something. They're maybe more expensive than that, but they were very, very inexpensive. There was a time where a lot of people were excited and modding those and using them, but they're not considered a great instrument. They're considered a budget, cheap, you know, student crappy instrument. But Laura Lee has committed to that instrument and plays it in Krongbin across stages all over the world, records with it, and it sounds fantastic. It doesn't matter. She likes it, and it makes it cool. And guess what? That inspires me to want to dive into the things that I think are cool too. Putting flats on a jazz bass, I think that sounds so good, right? And not listening to, well, flats only belong on a P bass, and you know, just doing the thing that you actually think is good, trusting your instincts, and then allowing people to shape and help mold that. But if it's dogmatic, or if it's someone saying, oh, no, that's wrong, ooh, red flag immediately. Before we go, let me tell you this too. Let me just give you one more thing. The same thing is true about social media. You didn't think we were going to talk about social media at the end of the pod, did you? Ha ha! Check it out. So many people, it is modeled to us that you are supposed to take on social media, that you are supposed to ask on social media. Like, hey, you're supposed to show something cool and then say, hey, come to my show or buy my product. Or, and listen here, this is hypocritical because I work for SBL. I know we send out a lot of emails about buy my product, right? I get it. But we also do a lot of things for free. We make a lot of free content that hopefully adds value. I really am bullish about that. I want to be making free content for YouTube that is valuable in and of itself. That then if you want to find out more, you can do the free 14-day trial, right? Or you can join the platform and hopefully then you love it. I really believe in it. But I don't want to tell you that SBL isn't selling. Of course we're selling. But we also want to provide value so that you think, so that you feel warm, fuzzy feelings about these people in this place. I do. I feel warm, fuzzy feelings about these people in this place, right? But for me on social media, my own channel, Ian Martin Allison, I try to not ask anything of you. I try not to say, hey, do this. Hey, buy this. Instead, I say, hey, think about this. Have you ever thought about this? Or hey, here's what I do. And hopefully, instead of you seeing that as a tactic of like, uh-oh, Ian's just getting ready to hit us with some kind of, you know, big sales offer. At some point, I might make a record. At some point, I might do HX, you know, stomp presets. But I'm never going to be like, oh, you got to buy this. I'm going to say, if you want to support me, here's a way to do that. That's what I would say. But I want to provide so much value. I want to give you so much insight around what I do and how I think and my process that you would want to support, right? That's what I want. And I see the opposite on social. I think the reason that people need to take breaks and that they feel so burned out about social media is because people see it as just a sales platform. Ugh, you're constantly being advertised to. You're constantly seeing somebody's highlight reel. You're not ever really being given to. And that's something that I tried to change about my approach to social media when I turned 40 and had a midlife crisis. Like, I need something of my own, which led me to SBL and amazing, really amazing good things. When I started to take Instagram really seriously, I started to follow this thought of what if I just gave? What if I document and give instead of ask? Like, hey, take lessons with me. I'm never asking that. If you notice, I'm never asking that on Instagram ever. Hey, come see this show. Hey, occasionally I'll say what I'm playing, but I very rarely promote. Hey, buy this product. I mean, I definitely make videos around products, but it's stuff that I love. It's stuff, honestly, that I just want to show you. And then if you're like, oh, I wouldn't use that. Great. It's all good. I just want to give. I want to give value. And then at some point when there's an ask, hopefully I've given you enough value that you think, oh, this ask is reasonable. But that's something that you can do as well on social media. You don't always have to be promoting. You don't always have to promote your show. Ask yourself, what is this post for? Is this post for me? Am I showing off my rock hard, like abs? You didn't know where that was going for a moment. I'm glad it went abs, right? Are you showing off like your sick new car that you got? How does that help your audience? How does showing your rock hard abs, or in my case, dad, super chubby dad bod abs, or a car, or, right? How does that help your audience? Now, of course, I'm guilty of showing pictures of bases, but then I also try to talk. I try to give value with words and say, hey, this is what I use this for, and it's great for XYZ, XYZ, if you're UK. Because I think that that's important, and it's not enough people are doing it. When you make a post, if you're posting on any platform, YouTube, TikTok, Snapchat, dude, you're posting on Snapchat for real? Vine? Wait, you're posting on Vine? If you're posting on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, wherever you're posting, ask yourself this. Who am I posting for? Am I posting for me to bolster my self-confidence? Or am I posting something that is going to be of value to my audience or to the audience that I want to attract? That's the big one. That's something that you've got to get through. And I'm telling you that it will, if you do that, it will change your life And I know that this doesn't sound like a rule-breaking thing, but I see, it seems to me, the rules of engagement for social media currently are take, ask, ask, take. And I think it should be give, 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 or give, give, ask, right? Ask, take, ask, ask, take, take. No, you should not be asking of your audience so much. You should not be taking of your audience so much. You should be giving. And then give two-thirds, ask one-third. I mean, obviously, I know that people make their livings on these platforms. I'm not saying you should never sell anything, but I'm saying like the amount of content that you make that is of value, of free value, will build brand. It will build goodwill. It will build a community of people that will want to support you in the future. That's what we are trying to build at SBL. I think what Scott has done a really good job of building, it's what I'm trying to build on my own, in my own career, even outside of SBL. And I think it's something that you should think about building as well. Ha 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 ha. How'd we do? I'm looking at my notes. We did all right. Hey, thank you so much for checking this out. I love doing this. I love it so much. And hopefully this gives you some permission. If you needed permission, hopefully this gives you some permission to trust your instincts. That's really what this is about. Trust your instincts. Trust your aesthetic. Trust what you think is good. Trust what you think is cool, right? And if anyone gives you some advice around, oh, you shouldn't do this, wonder, is that coming from the right place? So again, break these rules, but make sure that you're following the rules of kindness, support, playing for the song, being a good human, right? But then, aesthetic choices, aesthetic rules, tone rules, all these things that are like, oh, you shouldn't do that with strings and gear. And it's just not true. And then you might find that it is true. You might put a certain set of strings or use a certain pedal and you might find, oh, yeah, actually that was true. But endeavor to find those things out for yourself versus taking the word of a forum or a magazine or even me, okay? SBL, you're the best. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you in the next one.